Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christensen. And on today's episode, I'm going to cover benzodiazepine pharmacology. Now, as I went through my list of medications I've covered, it surprised me that I haven't covered benzodiazepines yet. They are definitely used in geriatrics, and you certainly see them in multiple other settings as well. So, for those of you maybe that don't know or learning benzodiazepines, some common ones that are actually seen, that I actually seen pretty regularly in clinical practice, alprazolam, that's brand name Xanax, lorazepam, which is Ativan, clonazepam, Clonopin, tamazepam, Restoril, sometimes not quite as much probably as some of the others mentioned there, and then occasionally diazepam as well, and that brand name is Valium. So these drugs work to enhance the effect of GABA. And GABA is one of those inhibitory type neurotransmitters. It does not cause, or excuse me, it kind of settles down those neurons. And with that, you can, kind of think of it in context of, you know, what this medication is going to treat, in that if we're going to settle down that patient, you can think of anxiety, you can think of insomnia, and that's, you know, primarily what I see benzodiazepines used for. Kind of finishing up on that mechanism of action, how it actually does it, it actually causes chloride ions to go into those neuronal cells. And this causes a state of hyperpolarization, which essentially makes the neurons less likely to fire and precipitate an action potential. So that's kind of rounds out the mechanism and a little bit, you know, behind it as to why it's used for, you know, certain indications and why it makes sense. So anxiety, insomnia, I mentioned for its indication. Seizures is another one, particularly lorazepam, diazepam, sometimes midazolam. Those can all potentially, midazolam is Versed, which I should have said that earlier, but those are potential uses, those three meds for seizures there. It can be used in anesthesia, as tranquilizer-type medication, again, leading to that hyperpolarization and settling down those neurons, essentially. Maybe a little bit less common, things you might not see quite as often, but alcohol withdrawal management can be used for that, certainly. Also, in certain settings of chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, it can help prevent some of that as well. So its effects, if we're thinking about settling down those neurons, you could imagine sedation or sleepiness would be an adverse effect. Confusion, slowing down that CNS, those synapses firing, it can obviously slow down the brain functioning. And, obviously dose-dependent can cause some confusion and CNS changes that way. Dizziness can certainly happen with these medications. Two really, really big things you need to think about when using these medications. One is fall risk. So that's very, very important, particularly in our elderly patient population. The other one is driving. So if we've got a medication that's going to cause sedation, drowsiness, confusion, mental cloudiness, that is obviously a big concern if we're, driving a motor vehicle, or if you've got, a machine operator, anything like that. We've got to be very, very careful with these medications. Benzodiazepines are on the Beers criteria, potentially inappropriate medications to use in the elderly, due to some of those side effects that I mentioned there. Now, you know, Beers criteria, that obviously comes with certain caveats and thing. If we're looking at an acute seizure, status epilepticus, for example, you know, benzodiazepines are probably going to be one of the drugs of choice in that situation. So, again, there's some caveats there, but in general, you know, for low-grade anxiety, low-grade insomnia, we're definitely not going to want to use these medications if we can at all help it in most situations there. A few other things that I wanted to mention as far as the adverse effect profile. I have seen this a few times, so this risk of disinhibition, if you will, and I do remember benzodiazepines, at least a lot of their effects, similar to being alcohol in a pill. And in some patients, depending upon the dose again, obviously if you get a big enough dose, you're going to cause that patient to be sedated, obviously, and sleeping. But if, you know, we find a dose that causes disinhibition, you may see, you know, an increase in aggressiveness or hyperactivity type situations, which is kind of a paradoxical effect compared to what we typically think of as benzodiazepines. So just important to keep that in mind, that that can potentially happen in a patient that's delirious, something like that. If you give a benzodiazepines, there is potential it could worsen it. Another adverse effect, this is generally as we get into higher doses, looking at anesthesia, things like that, or in combination with other at-risk drugs, which I'll talk about, but the risk for respiratory depression. So definitely important to remember that. Risk of dependence, withdrawal symptoms. So this is a scheduled medication. It is a controlled substance, all of these benzodiazepines. Also, tolerance can develop. You know, particularly to, you know, some of the effects like insomnia. Now, another good reason why we try to avoid these medications, definitely long-term, for the management of insomnia. And if you don't remember what tolerance is basically needing escalating doses or higher and higher doses to get the same effects that maybe you initially had with the medication there. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor here, and then we will wrap up with drug interactions. If you're a pharmacist, pharmacy student, med student, nursing student, go check out meded101.com/store. We've got great clinical books on medications, pharmacology. You can certainly check those out on Amazon and Audible. We've got links there. Also, if you're a pharmacist looking for board certification study material, MTM is a new certification. We've got study material for that. Ambulatory care exam, pharmacotherapy, geriatrics, and of course NAPLEX as well. If you're a student starting to look at information there, we've got links to our rxgrad.com sister site. So definitely go check those out. Again, meded101.com/store, S-T-O-R-E. Okay, so finishing up on drug interactions, and this is a little bit challenging, not talking about each specific agent. And again, I'm probably going to cover more benzodiazepines as I go along, but I just wanted to really get out a general podcast with the basics of benzodiazepines. But first off, there is an absolute boxed warning with the use of opioids. And the big risk with opioids in combination with benzodiazepine is patients are at much, much greater risk for sedation, respiratory depression, and ultimately death, basically in a setting of overdose, high doses. These patients are at risk of respiratory depression. And there's other risk factors as well, you know, obesity, sleep apnea, things like that, breathing difficulties already, somebody like that has COPD, for example, that may exacerbate this risk as well. But benzos and opioids are really a combination for all intents and purposes you really want to try to avoid if you can. If we're using both of these agents. You definitely want to look at the doses, how high the doses are. That's going to kind of play into that risk. And you also want to watch, monitor these patients closely and recognize if they're at risk for this respiratory depression and for things to happen. So very, very important. Opioids and benzos in general, if we can avoid it, absolutely should be trying to do that. Other drugs that I wanted to talk about that, you know, can really have some additive type effects on top of benzodiazepines. So remember the Z drugs. So those are commonly used for insomnia. I don't think I've done a podcast on them yet, but that may be coming up soon. These drugs essentially have a pretty similar mechanism to the way that benzodiazepines work. So you're basically going to double up on those sedative type CNS type side effects. So keep that in mind. You know, if you see a patient on both of these, remind the patient that these do work similarly, and probably to avoid taking them together. You know, obviously you got to do a little bit of background and see what the patient's currently doing and their background history. But yeah, so that class of drugs, definitely can have additive effects. Other, CNS depressants that I wanted to run through. So, you know, you think of your diphenhydramines, your hydroxyzine, doxylamine, some of those anticholinergics, those can certainly be sedating, and added with a benzodiazepine, can really ramp up that sedation. Melatonin, something you see used over the counter, definitely, you know, ask and remind patients about over the counter medications, if they are taking any. Some older skeletal muscle relaxants, those can certainly be sedating. I think of cyclobenzaprine, maybe a baclofen, things like that. And then, you know, drugs of abuse, potentially. So marijuana, that's obviously got some sedative type properties. You know, when you combine some of these drugs, you, for lack of a better term, you have no idea. You don't know what's going to happen, in that setting. Alcohol is another one where you really, you know, pile on that sedative, from the alcohol, that sedative side effect, that confusion side effect, the mind altering effect of alcohol with a benzodiazepine, you know, that can lead to, challenges and additive type side effects. And then of course we've, you know, got some older, seizure medications, phenytoin's a good example there, that can, phenobarbital, that can really have some, sedative CNS, type adverse effects. And, you know, really need to be really careful and, watch our patients, that are taking these medications together. So I think that's going to wrap up the benzodiazepine podcast for today. If you enjoy the show, leave us a rating review on iTunes. I greatly appreciate those. It really, makes my day some days with some of the nice comments and kind words, and it helps, keep me going and motivated to try to help, teach what I know and, share, pass along the information that I pick up as I'm out there practicing as a pharmacist too. So yeah, leave that rating, review, iTunes, wherever you're listening. Go snag that free resource at reallifepharmacology.com. That is a free 30-plus page PDF. Where you can get a hold of the top 200 drugs and really highly testable things. Great resource for, you know, a young nurse, young pharmacist, young, you know, med student, for example. So go check that out as well. I'm going to sign off for today. You can find me, shoot me a message, email at mededucation101@gmail.com. You can track me down on LinkedIn as well, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS, and I will sign off for today. Thanks for listening.